Jack Wilkie, I can't believe I got you here, but I got you here in Seal Beach. I've known you for, I want to say 10 years plus. It doesn't matter, but I can't thank you enough for flying in.
In dog years, it's a lifetime.
Yeah, it is. Listen, you know how much I love you and how much I respect you, and it's as long as I've known you, I got to tell you, I think we've had some good times together. We've done business together, obviously. But you got a great story, but this is going to be hard for me to ask because you are a very humble guy. Okay, but would you please, and can I beg you for this podcast, would you mind sharing? And I already heard about your book, okay? I heard about this wonderful book that your wife put together for you, and it's about your entire career. But what's interesting about that book and what's interesting about you is you own a security company now, and that came later in life. And I got to tell you, with all the podcasts and ones I have done, I've heard from the people that do look at the podcast. They say what's really interesting is that you've had people that have a business degree, a master's degree, and then they got in the security business. I don't have any of that, and I got into the business, but they have the same problems. They have the same concerns, same issues. It's real. And he goes, I know it may sound cruel to say this, but it's exciting to hear, to know that even somebody with that kind of business talent go through the same things that I do with their education and their background. And then they got into a business like I did. And they're having to count the same issues. Can we go back? Can you go deep and just tell me about your family and your background? Because you worked with Amway. You did 7-Eleven franchise, Franklin Mint. You're at Ronald Reagan's house, okay? There was a signature of Ronald Reagan thanking you, Jack, okay? And that's a great story too, but, and I don't want to start getting into that right now, but would you mind? Could you open that up a little bit? And then we'll get into the security side.
Sure. You're absolutely right. Everybody has the same issues in the security business. And based upon your background, maybe there's different ways of approaching it. Who knows? But everybody has their own life journey. And mine is split up into thirds. The first part was really public affairs, where I learned a lot and worked with some really incredible people. And then I went into network marketing and direct marketing, and then retail. And along that course, I worked with some really incredible privately held companies and then publicly traded companies. And you learn all the time. You learn all the time. And I was just fortunate to work with some really great folks. But at the beginning, I learned most of it from my father, who was a small business guy. And I remember how hard he worked. He said, I eat every day, I work every day. And he did. He put in incredible hours. And I learned the importance of discipline. Really holding up your word was a pledge. It meant everything. Now, in corporate terms, it's your brand. No, it's who you are. You say you're going to do something, you got to do it, and people will trust you. And that's the biggest thing. So I always thought I was going to go into his business. It was a rebuilding business of clutches, brake pads, all heavy-duty industrial things for trucks and big companies. And he didn't want me to do that. Thought it was too dirty a business. Dirty on your hands, but also a little bit rough. And he wanted something different from me, something better. And I think most parents do. They all have an idea of what they want their kids to do, and they hope their kids are better. So he didn't go to college. I go to college. Thought I was going to go into his business, and instead, I met a guy who was with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and he asked me to join the U.S. Chamber. And I said, I don't even know what a local chamber does, and he recommended I go up to Appleton, and I worked in Appleton. Couple of years, U.S. Chamber saw me, brought me into Washington. And while I'm in Washington, I worked with a lot of different companies, chairs of different big companies, PepsiCo, Kraft, et cetera. And one was the chairman, co-founder of Amway Corporation. His name was Jay Van Andel. Really good man, really good man. And he asked me to join him and work on his staff in Ada, Michigan. And I went to Ada, Michigan, and started about an 8.5-year career there, which was just absolutely incredible. I thought it was neat while I was doing it. As I look back, I felt like Forrest Gump. If it happened in the 80s, I was there somehow. Because Jay Van Andel and his partner, Rich DeVos, very creative guys, men of integrity, men of the church, were in volunteer associations. Jay, chairman of the U.S. Chamber, chairman of the Netherlands American Bicentennial Commission, Rich, finance chairman of the Republican National Committee. And as their public affairs guy, when they went to these meetings, they brought me with. And I supported them, maybe some follow-up work that had to be done. And it put me in some incredible situations, meeting some really neat people. So that was very cool.
Now, the Voss brothers, obviously the owners of Amway, I was a distributor for Amway back in the 80s. Okay, I sold soap. I did the whole thing. So when did they start? When you came in, were they a pretty big business already?
They started in 1959. They were with a company from Buena Vista, California, called Nutrilite. And those were food supplements and vitamins. They were the big distributors. And then in 59, they started Amway Corporation. And these two guys on their own. Again, I'm joining them in 80-ish. In 20 years, they built a billion-dollar company with distributors all over the U.S. And they had some issues. The FTC said, oh, it's a pyramid scheme. It was not. It was network marketing. You couldn't buy into a position. It was a great company, really good company. In fact, 60 Minutes did a piece on Amway. It was the old joke, having a bad day when Mike Wallace knocks on your door. Mike Wallace knocked on our door. And I worked with Mike in 60 Minutes, his producer, Alan Moranis, and they did a big expose on Amway Corporation. And you don't get positive puff pieces on 60 Minutes. This was okay. Before it aired, I had a copy of the tape. All the main distributors were at a big meeting in Hawaii. We brought the tape, and we showed them the tape. Said, this is what's going to air. This is how you're being perceived. And they all came up and said, that's not us. And they came up with 10 rules of conduct that they were going to follow. And they changed the way Amway did business. None of the, come on over for a business meeting, and all of a sudden it's Amway. Come on over for dinner, and they're surprising you with an Amway meeting. So we sat on that for a while. We changed. And I didn't give up on Wallace. I went back to him 3 months later, and I told him, you really made a difference in this company. I want to thank you. What do you mean? Showed him the rules of conduct. He said, you really changed. I said, yeah. Later on, 2 months down the road in Grand Rapids, we're having the grand opening of the Gerald R. Ford Museum, an art museum, in the Amway Grand Plaza Hotel. President Ford and his wife Betty are going to be there. I invited Mike Wallace to the meeting to see how Amway had changed. After the dinner, out in the lobby of the Amway Grand Plaza Hotel, Mutual Broadcasting System, Larry King, who Amway owned Mutual Broadcasting System.
Really?
Yeah. I did their PR too. Anyway, while Larry King is there, we get Mike Wallace to go on air with Larry King. And Wallace starts talking about Amway being such a great company. These guys are so good. Associated Press is there, Grand Rapids Press. The next day, the headlines all across the country. Wallace sold on Amway. So we took a potentially devastating piece on 60 Minutes and turned it into an endorsement from one of the toughest guys in television.
Well, that a big part of that recommendation was you saying, let me go back and talk to Wallace.
The whole thing.
Yeah.
I went back on my own, but that's what we did. It was fantastic. So the lesson, I guess, if you're really pure in your belief in what you're doing, you can continue and try to sell that story, and you never give up. I didn't give up because, oh, a story ran. I wanted to change the whole narrative, and we did. And it was embarrassing. At the time, there was a vice president. I was a director at Amway, and Wallace was in talking about Amway, and he kept saying, I'd call Jack. And the guy who was the head of the PR group, Public Affairs, was Casey Wunderjim. And every time they'd mention my name, Casey would shrug. But I developed a really good relationship with Wallace that actually became an endorsement, a reference for me for my next job.
That is absolutely the Mike Wallace.
Yeah.
And how was Larry King? Did you get to meet, obviously you met him.
Yeah, I met him a lot. This was interesting. Amway had purchased Mutual Broadcasting System. They thought that a lot of coverage was not fair. It was too far left. And King had a show, and one of our jobs was to listen to the show, listen to the guests, and make your recommendations on other guests that might balance the coverage. You can't do that directly in the media. But Marty Rubenstein was the president at the time, and we would listen, and we'd make a suggestion to Marty. Somehow it got filtered down to Larry, and different guests got on the program.
Really got to work it, huh?
What makes me think today when I watch the news and I see such bias, I know it's being pushed someplace. Because in a little bitty fashion, we did it. But it's being done on such a global scale right now. There's very few places to get the truth. You have to hear so many different sources, sort it out for yourself, and then you never really know either.
Yeah, and the internet really screws things up too. So you didn't have all that back then, right? It was marketing paper, right? Am I wrong? The internet was just coming out?
No, it was all new. Social media was a new phenomenon. I mean, we're talking about the 1980s.
Right.
And you could do certain things then. You could control certain things. You could avoid certain publicity. In today's world, everybody's got a phone. Everybody's got a camera. Everybody's got a story to sell. And right or wrong, it's out there. And you have to deal with the consequences. It's very hard.
Yeah, I guess you got to be real careful what you post, huh? What you say.
Yep.
It follows you everywhere.
So that's so Wallace, oddly enough, this was funny. Toward the end of my career at Amway, again, these guys were involved in everything. I mentioned the Netherlands American Bicentennial. So we took Slava Rostropovich, who was this great cellist and director of the National Symphony and Orchestra. We did a 17-city tour of Europe with Queen Beatrix and Prince Klaus from the Netherlands. They came to the U.S. We did all these wonderful events with them. And they also, the DeVos and Vandal, were also very involved in racing and sailboat racing. And it was 1980, trying to remember the year, 82, 83. The U.S. lost the America's Cup. They're in Newport, Rhode Island, seventh race. Dennis Conner is about to start the race. It's tied up 3-3. Australia, John Bertrand versus Dennis Conner. And DeVos said, win or lose, we're going to have to defend the cup or challenge for the cup. He said, let's create a syndicate just like that. I want you to develop the structure for it, do the fundraising. And we put together a syndicate called America 2 Challenge because Dennis lost that race. The New York Yacht Club, a couple of other folks, the U.S. Coast Guard, and we raised $15 million to challenge for a cup that America had held for 151 years. Longest running win streak in history in sports. And we started putting a lot of money into that race. We have Amway in Australia. We can't steal their cup. So we create a defense club in Australia where Amway distributors are selling merchandise and raising money for the defense. In the U.S., we're trying to take the cup. We want to get somebody who would be a spokesperson for us. So who's the most trusted man in America? Walter Cronkite. So we go to CBS. It was Neil Pilson, headed up sports at the time, and I made the pitch. And I said, if we produce the Walter Cronkite America's Cup report, just an hour program, would you air it? We'll get the sponsors, but would you air it? Back and forth, yeah. So Cronkite goes to Australia. They send me to Australia because I've cut the stuff. Now I'm out of pocket from Amway. I'm in Australia for 6 months trying to do some work in the U.S., mostly doing America's Cup work. And we produce the show. We do vignettes for football, NFL football, little minute and a half segments on how the races are going. And it was fantastic, probably the most exciting time of my life. And America 2 lost. It's a three-round challenge. First round is worth a point. Second round, 3 points. Third round, 5 points. This is called the Louis Vuitton race for the right to challenge the Australians for the America Cup. We're killing it, man. We're winning every race first round, winning every race second round. Then we would decide we're going to make a little design change in the boat because it could go maybe a little faster. So we're winning races by 4 and 5 minutes, which is like 49-0 in football. Third round comes up, we're losing by 3 seconds, 7 seconds. The boat is hobby horsing. It's not cutting through the water correctly. They made a mistake on the keel. Once you start a series in a race, you can't change the configuration of the yacht. We lose. Dennis Conner, running Stars and Stripes, winds up becoming America's hero and wins the race. We'd given him our sail program, our research, everything, and he sneaks in and ultimately wins the cup. Amway's so distraught. We've lost this thing. I'm working with all these kids. They're young kids. I'm 35. These kids are like in their 20s. Everybody's, what are we going to do next? I did the next thing that I thought would be right. I got married there. And then went on an extended honeymoon. So I think I'm done with this stuff. Full circle now. I leave Amway and I see an opportunity with the Franklin Mint. It was an ad. They used to do ads in the Wall Street Journal. And I responded to the ad. And I needed some references. So my references, I thought they must have thought I was BSing. My references were Gerald Ford, President Gerald Ford, Walter Cronkite, Mike Wallace. And Mike said, absolutely. And I found out that Mike had actually been stationed in Fremantle, which is where the races were held in Western Australia, where I got married. He almost got married there. Full circle. Staying in touch with people, always straight shooting. And then later on, he even came to me and he said, when you guys were doing the show, did you game us? I said, what do you mean, game us? Because when he was shooting, I had cameras shooting everything they did. Because if I had to, I was going to go back and see how things were taken out of context and tell the real story. I said, no. I said, we did some training. We had a guy named Wally Pfister with Executive Television Workshop help us, coach us. How do you deal with the tough question? How do you steer it your way? He said, oh, wow, that's great. I'm going to do a show. Would you put me in touch with him? And he did a series or an episode on 60 Minutes called Mike Freight. How you deal with Mike Wallace in 60 Minutes. So all that stuff became a relationship.
Reagan, I saw that you were mentioned about a photograph from Reagan. Interesting.
Again, this is because of the situation I'm in. I'm working for these two guys who are very involved politically. Huge contributors to the Conservative Party, the Republican Party at that time. And the two guys, Rich DeVos and Jay Van Andel, always wanted to be united in their position, like a husband and wife with kids, one position. And during the primary, they had decided they weren't going to pick a candidate yet. One of the guys happened to be in Texas and decides, I'm going for George Bush. I'm with the other guy in California. He hears about it, gets very upset, and said, I think we should talk to Reagan. And I had been in touch with Mike Deaver at the time, and we're literally in the air flying out of California. I get to Deaver, and we turn the plane around. We land. Deaver meets us at a gas station, and it was Jay Van Andel, his wife Betty, me in the car, that's it, and Deaver, and he brought us up to the ranch. And it was the first time I met in person Ronald Reagan. Met him many times after that. But I was so impressed. This guy was, he was so genuine. He was so nice. I remember the shirt. He was wearing a blue polo shirt. And he was like, the guy was built.
Really?
Yeah. Probably all that wood chopping and stuff he did. But I remember it so clearly. It was like it was yesterday. His wife, he comes out, greets us at the car. It's here at your uncle's house or something. His wife, Nancy, comes out, greets us, says hello to everybody. The dog's wagging the tail, the whole thing. And they treated me, and I'm just a staff guy. I'm nobody. I'm not giving the millions. I'm just the guy who set up the meeting. They treated me as an equal. I thought they were going to go sit down and talk. They included me in on the conversation. And Nancy gets us a Coke and the whole thing. It was just so warm. I said, this is a special guy. And we did different rallies. And the Van Andel and DeVos group put together independent expenditures, a lot of ads, Time Magazine, things like that, endorsing Reagan. And he won. And he came to Grand Rapids several times after that and was thankful. And he sent me a picture coming off Air Force One in Grand Rapids. And it's one of the few pictures, tons of, everybody's got the Wall of Fame. This one I kept. It was too jagged. Thanks for everything, blah, 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 Ronald Reagan. And I kept that one.
You have a lot of stuff we were talking about that you've, yeah, you've,
but
you're
again,
humble.
Chris, it's just, it's being around influential people, and I'm just a staff guy trying to help them out. That's all it is. And I was fortunate, again, these guys were the kings of network marketing, and I loved the company. As I look back, you know, you see some fingerprints, there's always politics going on. This guy's a little too close to those guys. He's not a family member, blah, blah, blah. But it was fantastic. And then I got lucky, and I went to the Franklin Mint, another brilliant couple who owned direct marketing.
You're talking about the Franklin Mint,
the
right?
Franklin Mint, suburban Philadelphia. Everybody thought it was just coins, numismatics.
Yeah.
When I was there, it was only 1% of the business. They had an entire line of jewelry products, home decor, weapons, historic weapons replicas, dolls, die-cast cars. Incredible company. And the Resnicks bought it, and it was like $187 million when they bought it, and they checked out at about $1.2 billion, something like that. But they were brilliant. Stuart Resnick was a financial entrepreneurial genius, a kid from New Jersey who starts a window washing business, sells it as a janitorial business, selling Christmas cards at Christmas, taking photos and selling the decorations that people have in their houses. Always entrepreneur, always made money. And Linda, brilliant marketer. Linda had also, they also owned Teleflora. She came up with the concept of flowers in a gift. You don't just get the flowers, they die, they go away. So she had different vases, different products that you could keep after the flowers die. And she won advertising awards for it and everything else. Everything she did, she had one mandate. It's got to be the best. Don't care what it costs, it has to be the best. So her brilliant marketing mind, his financial mind, created the Franklin Mint. And I started there. And again, they liked my references. They called them all. They checked out.
They did.
Yeah.
Just a, yeah. Wow.
Because they called me and I was like, because their recruiter said, what? And so I started there and I was doing PR for about a month. Stuart didn't care for publicity. He said, if I want a message out, we'll do it in advertising. Publicity, uncontrollable, don't want it. So I quickly moved into continuity marketing. We never did more than one product at a time. We always did one product that we'd market via brochure, direct mail, advertising. And we had a bunch of inventory, and I came up with the idea of pulling out all the excess inventory and create a little catalog. The catalog went crazy. So we started doing catalogs. We had a magazine called Almanac, went out to 1.5 million people, and it was costing us hundreds of thousands of dollars. We were losing money. We had advertising reps in New York and all this stuff. I brought it back into suburban Philadelphia. We created the Almanac. We had 5 ads within it, and at the end of it, we had a magalog. The magalog had maybe 3 pages of miscellaneous product. I had 3 well stories in the magazine, the hero stories, one on collecting jewelry or dolls, whatever it might be, and then the product at the back reflected what was out there. The very front, I had a Franklin Mint World. So I would present, God, eagles to Hillary Clinton, Norman Schwarzkopf, we did a bust of him. Warren Berger did a Ben Franklin bust. I'd put all those little stories in there in the front to make it newsy, the 3 big well stories, and then the catalog at the back. That first issue netted over $1 million. It put us into the catalog business. That's what I did.
And that's big, numbers back then. That's huge numbers.
It's big numbers today.
Yeah.
So, again, had an unbelievable team around me. The Resnicks gave me the ability to do it. And I wish I had even more of a business mind at the time. I think I could have crunched it out even more. But it was fantastic. Then they decided to go back to California, where they own Teleflora still, purchased Fiji water, Palm Wonderful, the pomegranates and all the juices and the pomegranates. They're the largest grower of pistachios and almonds in the country. Up in Bakersfield, they have over 126 miles of farmland. They're incredible, and they're very generous. They never forget their people. They send us a card every year, a little gift box, which is so nice at Christmas. They've been incredibly generous. A couple of years ago, just an example, $45 million to the Los Angeles County Museum of Art. So the lessons on that stuff is do your best. Maintain relationships with people. They stayed in touch with every one of their contacts. And then out of your wealth, you can give and do for other people. Same way at Amway. Large contributors. That something I try to do. Their million is my $10.
Man, how do you keep a normal thought process when you're dealing with, you've seen so much money, these people, you flew on layer jets, you sailed Walter Cronkite on a sailboat. Yeah, you're just a staffer, but you're around, you told me about that yacht. What's that place you went into? You got to share that thing. You went into that yacht.
Amway had, they've got a lot of boats. The one at the time was called the Enterprise, and I think it was like a 112-foot Fed ship, beautiful yacht. And they were getting a new one, Enterprise 2, being built in the Netherlands. And they asked me to go check on the progress of the shipbuilding. So I go there and check it out, and it's like the coolest thing I'd ever seen. And it's being built in a little town called Van Wert. And they look like huts you would think of from 14th century England, little grass huts. And you go inside, and it's this incredible shipbuilding place. And I thought it was the greatest thing I'd ever seen. And then I went next door where they're building another yacht. It was from some guy from Lebanon. 220-foot Fed ship, glass hull, operating room. I mean, it's this guy's own kingdom. He could go anywhere in the world and have everything he needed. So you see that stuff. And at the time, it's impressive. But you don't really think about, oh, my God, how cool that was. It's just you're just doing whatever your job was, checking the progress, how are they doing, and you start. You don't take it for granted, but you just, oh, that's the way we roll. You get me a suite at Des Indies, a Hotel Des Indies at The Hague. That's cool. You just don't think about it much. When I reflect on it, I say, oh, wow, that was pretty incredible. They had so many planes at Amway. Wow, they had Citations and Bach 111, 727s. And when you needed to go someplace, you could requisition a plane. It was like it just became the way it was. So felt like a family member, lived in a world like that, and you just accept it. When you don't have it, then you say, oh, my God, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. You met all kinds of bands. We were talking about the Beach Boys. Mike Lovett, is that what you said?
Yeah, Mike Love.
Mike Love.
That, again, just an example of one of the things we would do. This was with Amway Corporation again. Amway was celebrating its 25th anniversary. And the Washington Monument's 100th. And then Secretary of the Interior James Watt said that the Beach Boys were a bad influence on the young people in America. So the guy who worked for Amway, who had also been President Ford's key guy in the White House, Bill Nicholson, said, let's sponsor the Beach Boys' return to Washington, and we're going to have a D.C. beach party on July 4th. Okay, what do you want me to do? I'll just set it up. We're going to pay like $75,000, and you'll do a barbecue, bring in the top distributors, blah, blah, blah. All right. So we start putting together the show. And the show was the Beach Boys. I don't know if your people still remember these names, but Moody Blues, Three Dog Night, Hank Williams Jr., LaToya Jackson, the OJs, Julio Iglesias, Ringo Starr on drums, I don't know, and all the rest. Big show. 1 million people were on the mall for this show. And at the conclusion, we're doing a final number. And Bill went on stage with a guitar. Nicholson, the guy who set it up, they put me on keyboard, unplugged. They were all singing Barbara Ann. and all this is captured. And I told my kids about it one time, not too long ago, and they Googled it, and the concert's on air. It's there, and there's, here I am. It's cool. And they did an album with it, and they gave me credit as executive producer. I didn't do anything, but put my name on there. So that was cool stuff. And it's cool. You ride in, you're there, you're cruising out in limos, fireworks are going up, and you're taking off on a plane while all that's happening. It's, wow. As you think back, that was memorable. Doesn't do anything for me today, but it's a nice memory.
Yeah, but the fact you're a humble guy, that's hard to step down from. So Amway, Franklin Mint, and then 7-Eleven, right?
Yeah, this was great. While I was at Franklin Mint, it's so funny. It's every little thing has a connect. So I'm at Franklin Mint, and the Dallas Symphony Orchestra is going to have an auto show. I bring in all the Franklin Mint models as a display. My sister was on their board. So that's a connection. So we put together this display. One of the board members is Jim Keyes. We hit it off. Keyes was chief operating officer for 7-Eleven. We start talking. He said, you want to come down to Dallas? I don't know where I'd put you, but you got background in public affairs and PR and communications, and I need somebody in franchising. I've done that. So I hooked up with 7-Eleven and had a remarkable career there. Really enjoyed it. About 8 years, something like that. And at the end of that time, Jim had become chief executive officer. And the Japanese, our licensee in Japan, put a cash tender offer for the company. They bought the company. So we're not publicly traded anymore. It's now privately held by the Japanese. And there were 8 of us on the executive board. Every one of us got a package, but we had to leave. It was gone. All operations people. But some of the fun things before that happened, all the stuff, whether it's ringing the closing bell at the New York Stock Exchange, all that kind of fun stuff. But our 75th anniversary might have been the biggest celebration of all time for 7-Eleven, and I got to stage that. This was after 9-11. We'd planned to be in New York, and everything had stopped. And I get a call from Rudy Giuliani. Will you please come back? We were the first group to come back as a convention in New York after 9-11. And we had a blowout convention. The purpose of the convention was not a celebration. It was to make sure our franchisees were aligned with the corporate office on a new contract, a new royalty structure. We brought them in from all over the world, about 3,000 people. We did the red carpets from the hotels to Radio City Music Hall. We had huge events on Ellis Island, big, huge parties and functions. We did an expo, like a trade show, at Madison Square Garden. But the big finale was Radio City Music Hall, and I produced something called One World Jam. And we put together, the idea was to show a diverse audience, people all over the world. So we had these women who played violin called Bond. I had Japanese drummers. I had Ja Rule, Nelly, Chicago, Elton John, 30-some artists. And it was a huge hit, just a huge hit. And people don't forget it. In fact, I got a text the other day from Jim who was saying, I remember all of our times. He said, especially 9-11, the way we responded to that, and, of course, 75th anniversary. So anyway, fun times.
All right. Now, I got to ask.
Now I'm a guard.
Now you're a guard.
No alcohol, no drugs. I didn't have to recover.
You didn't come from a rehab center, right? No, none of that. None of that. You just go straight in. So that's, I think, when I met you, right? Or no, you.
I actually, it was right before 7-Eleven. I was with a call center group called Novo One, and we had about 1,500 people, maybe $30 million in revenue, and I was running their sales marketing. And we got it up to $250 million, which was pretty fast. Some of it was acquisition. And then we got acquired by a company in Michigan. And they wanted me to move to Detroit. And I just didn't want to do it.
Yeah.
So I'm working. Again, there was an association for call centers. It was called PACE. And within PACE, we wanted to have a bigger mission. A friend of mine, Matt Zivan, decided, let's put together a group. We're going to call it Jobs for America. And our goal is going to be to return 100,000 call center jobs from India and the Philippines to the U.S. in 1 year. And I think we did 107,000. Let's do it again. So they made me CEO, which sounds really cool. It paid zero. Flipping title. I'm a volunteer. So we're thinking about a business plan to convert all these members of PACE, and there's a $5 billion industry, to Jobs for America. And I needed some time to write. And I needed time away from the house. I needed a place. And right around the corner from my sister, there's this community called Oakdale. And I figured, they got guards all the time. What do they do in the evening? So I watched the thing. They don't do anything. So I said, I'll apply for a job there. I can sit down, write my stuff unencumbered. That would be great. And I did that. And the owner of the company at the time was Michael Rendon. And he asked me how the training went. I said, I don't know. I don't know what I don't know. It was 20 minutes. How to use this tablet. Eh. And then I got around it. So I put together a training manual, a playbook, and how this whole thing works. Oh, my gosh. You should be doing my marketing. And so I helped him with sales for a little while, but we were traveling all over the country to help train people. Not my thing. But I really liked Michael, and I liked his product. So I continued to use the product. Jobs for America, we decided we didn't want to tap into that membership base. Decided don't want to do it. So I'm thinking about what do I want to do next, if anything. Everybody's got bills to pay. I'd like to do something, like to show some income. And I was working at this community, and the board asked me, they told me they're going to get rid of the company, but they want to keep me. Would I create a proposal? So I developed a company, a website. You know the guy who helped me, John Lee.
Yeah.
Who did work with SIS.
Yeah.
John Lee puts the website together for me. I make the pitch. And all of a sudden, I'm in the security business. And no background in it. But my experience carried over to make it effective. And the experience was, number one, you've got to deliver really top service. And the only way to do that was to have technology to assist you. Mike Rendon had the technology that worked for me, Gate Sentry. No surprise visits. Somebody comes into the community, either they're on the list or they're not. I press a button and the residents get an email or a text was here. But now you got to get people to really do that. Technology is great. How do you get your people to consistently do that? So I hired a completely new team. I didn't want anybody with a security background. I went to hospitality industry, retirees, students. So I hired for attitude, and I trained them for aptitude. I want friendly people. I want smiling faces. I want people when they get in there, you're going to acknowledge them. Know their name. Find out what car they're driving. Within a few weeks, you're going to know who's coming in. Only a couple hundred people in the community know who they are.
It's a relationship build, like well, you talk about that, to a
that,
certain degree.
A big part of it, but start with that service and the training. And the training is not just how to use the tablet, this tablet, but the soft skills that go with it. How do you greet somebody? How do you get a driver's license from someone where they don't resist or push back? You don't say, hey, give me that license. I got to take a picture of it. I'm not going to give you my license. How are you today, Chris? Can I see your ID? I'll get you right in. There's the ID. I put it under the tablet. They don't even know I'm taking the picture. It's a click, click. Thank you so much. Have a great day. Get the driver license plate as they're leaving. It's a friendly exchange. I treated every vendor, every guest, just like it was a resident. Those vendors and guests tell the residents, oh, that was so nice to come into the community. That guy's so nice. That woman's so nice. That's what you do. And you can train them on that, but you have to coach them on it too. So many companies that I've seen in my market, the owners are never on site. They may watch them on camera. They're never on site. I make tons of unannounced visits. And I don't try to, like, yell at people. I catch them doing something right. I stop by with a sandwich, a pastry, a cup of coffee, whatever. And you encourage that good behavior. That creates, too corporate, but it creates the culture. And that's a real thing. If you got the right culture, the right team, these people will perform for you. And if you don't, they're going to screw you. Because anybody can game the system. Here comes a delivery guy from Amazon. Oh, okay, go ahead. Amazon. What's the driver? Abdul. It was Raul, not Abdul. You put something in. So I show them how I can track it all, how I can observe it, how they're doing such a good job. And I pay them well.
Vision Insights is the simplest, most powerful security guard management software. No long training, no complicated systems. Guards can start reporting in minutes. Train your teams with micro trainings, attaching video to individual checkpoints to walk them through sensitive procedures. Submit accurate reports every time with dynamic observations that automatically rewrite, categorize, and prioritize, removing human error. And grow your business with daily, monthly, and quarterly insights, the most advanced reports available today. Vision Insights, the simplest, most powerful way to report.
So I've had that community for a couple of years now. And it's like minimal turnover. The turnover was I've got a student who's at SMU pursuing her master's in psychology. She got the degree and she's doing her practicum now. So she's no longer with me. Okay, I'll get another student. So you have continuity with people, residents like it, constant feedback, positive where you can, corrective when needed, but all in a positive manner, and your people stay with you.
That's, you bring up fantastic points in your company, Paladin.
Yep.
Gate Guard.
Okay. Gate Guardians.
Gate mm-hmm. Guardians. I'm sorry, Gate Guardians. Now, I want people to understand, you were in that shack and you were observing all this before you even opened up. You were there for a while. And
yes.
You saw all the frustration. Could you go back and explain to them what you saw as far as staff and problems? And you've already said a little bit about minus ownership or management. Why is that? And that was pretty much, I think that's pretty standard. You've been around this business for a long time. You didn't just get in for a week and then I'm going to go open the guard. You had relationships. You were there for a long time trying to train and teach people. Can you share some of the things you saw, problems outside of just lack of supervision or show?
It's, again, I'm going to go corporate on you. In Six Sigma, there's a lean Six Sigma. It's called Kaizen. It's one best way. One best way process. And in my mind, I developed one best way for everything we do. How do you arrive and where do you park? What are you wearing when you arrive on site? What are you wearing when you come in the door? There's a sign-in sheet, a turnover log. Let's do that consistently. Make sure your nameplate's on the outside. You're in perfect uniform. I want that name. It's the law in Texas, but I want to see it. You don't wear a shirt that's hanging out and sloppy slacks and white socks and gym shoes. You don't do that. So it's one best way. When visitors arrive, one best way. Using Gate Sentry as a guide. Gate Sentry is just phenomenal for making sure we have the same process every time. I've got the tablet. Somebody arrives. Hello, where are you going today? They're going to tell you. They're either a guest or a company doing some work. It separates it. Find the name. There's the ID. If not, I ask for the ID. Get it. Press grant. Communication. So that has to be followed perfectly. The soft skills have to be followed perfectly. Frowning and moping around, not tolerated. Falling asleep, oh, come on. I know it's tough on the night shift. We're paying you. You got to stay alert. But everything's got a process. The way you answer the phone. Oakdale Gatehouse, Jack speaking. How may I help you? Everything's got a process. I want to hear it the same way. I call the gatehouse. Yo, what? Guy check. What? It's a gatehouse. You're an officer. You're not a security officer. You're an officer. What are you securing? You're as much guest relations as you are security. You're welcoming in to the community. You're the brand face for that community. And if you do it right, the contract gets renewed, you get paid. Oh, you never had vacation before? Now you do. You had to pay for your uniforms before? Not anymore. You need to take a day off or something? I'll get coverage. So you build that esprit de corps, and it really helps. The other thing I learned, and this was from the call center industry, it had 250% turnover or more every year. And we found out that if you live within 10 miles of your workplace, you stay longer. If you have a friend in the company, you stay longer. So even though our guards are usually working independently, if they've got another buddy who works for the company, they like it, they talk to each other, they stay longer. So the problem I have now, recruiting is always an issue. Problem I have right now is I have too many people who want to work for me, and I don't have enough shifts. Got another property, but you get a lot to juggle.
Yeah, I like what you did as far as uniforms, too. You actually, when I thought it was a smart idea, because a lot of the guard companies, they go cheap, right, costs, and they let these guys take their uniforms home, and then they'll throw bleach into the uniform. Shirt comes back half the size. The patches are faded. All the issues come with it. But I think you took a real smart approach. You actually sent them down, if you want to share that, because that's a great idea.
I went to uniform companies, and people, they don't know their sizes, or a size comes in, it doesn't quite fit. So I wound up asking all the guys and women to go to a store. It was Men's Warehouse. And had them go to Men's Warehouse and get measured. Found out most of them didn't know their sizes. Never been measured for a sports coat or anything. Had them go there, some slacks, a couple of nice white shirts, because otherwise it's just too inconsistent. Someone is getting a bargain shirt from Dollar Store or Walmart or wherever, and if you wear it one time, it looks great, but it doesn't hold up. So I wanted the right uniform. You have to, that's silly, but the belt gets lined up. They call it a gig line.
Yeah, nobody knows who that is.
Can you line up the belt with the show? Oh, that's nice. White socks, really? Come on, guys. Do you have any black shoes? They should be able to bring their own black belt and black shoes. Saw a guy wearing tennis shoes he didn't have. I said, what size are you? And I ran over to a shoe store around the corner and came back with a pair of shoes. Put these on. You just got to do it.
Yeah.
And so if I see him in sandals, I'm going to break his toenails.
Yeah. People will go. Or people would say today, oh, I'd never go to Men's Warehouse because the turn is going to be ridiculous and I don't want to spend the money on them. But my thinking, tell me if I'm wrong, but when you buy them a nice pair of slacks like that, they're going to use it. And that's okay. I would think if they're going to want to take care of it because they're probably going to want to use it when they go out to dinner. They have a jacket or at least a pair of good pants and belt. They have a tendency to take care of it because they can wear it for other things. So on the reverse side, yeah, it's a little more expensive. And I don't care if they use it. I wouldn't care if they go use it, dress for the party, but just take care of it.
Yeah, it's regular garments.
Yeah.
I'm not wild about them wearing any logoed sports coat.
Yeah.
That I don't want to do, or
yeah,
polo shirts that we have in the summertime. But I know it cuts into margin, but I wanted the consistency. These guys are living paycheck to paycheck. And I just thought it was like the right thing to do. I would hate to go to work for somebody and first paycheck, they're holding back $25 or $50 or whatever. And I didn't want to make it complicated. I could have said, I'm giving you all these things. And if you stay with me over a certain period of time, it goes away. You're paying over time in effect. It gets complicated. It's just, here's the uniform, that's it. Another thing that really cropped up, all of a sudden people get creative with headgear. I had a guy show up as a new hire, an overnight guy, and I stopped in the morning around 5, see how he's doing, and got this like orange ski cap with tassels and stuff on top. Said, is that for religious purposes? No, what the hell is that? And no, I just wanted to keep his head warm. So I've got caps and beanies. They're really nice. If I don't have a logo on it, you don't wear it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
So you handle it nicely. Here's a new one. You go dust something with that one.
Do you do the cleaning for them, or do they How do you do? They just take care of the uniform?
Well, yeah, we take care of our own things. Over. Yeah. I have shift responsibilities. Third shift should sweep, mop the floor, make sure the trash is empty. But what we do is make sure each shift, if guys have something that's smelly or fills, just take the trash out, put in a new liner. If I'm in, and I'm in a couple times a week, 2-3 times a week, I'm going to sweep. I'm going to mop the floor. I have special people come in to clean windows and things like that. But everybody, you're there by yourself, but it's still a team. So when you come in, do you want to have somebody's nacho sauce on the counter or something gross? No. So you leave it the way you want to arrive with it. Everybody's got it. We had one guy. This is terrible. I'm going to tell you anyway. Nice guy, great guard, overnight guard. And every time I'd walk in the restroom, if I'm relieving on first shift, guy just couldn't hit the toilet. Always, and it used to frustrate me. I got to get a mop and spray. Yeah. And nice guy. And finally, one time I said, man, Johnny, really great guy, big black guy. You're destroying the myth. You can't hit that toilet. What is wrong with you? And he laughed. It's always clean.
What you got to do. That's great.
Hate that. Hate that mess.
Because you have changed culture, I think, and a lot of people, maybe they're not aware of this, but in HOA, not dues, the guard can get a pretty good rate, but come Christmas time and the holidays, if I'm not wrong, those kids make out quite a bit.
Yeah, they do. There was a fellow who had the company before I took it over, and he didn't have the highest hourly rate, but he would talk about the holidays and how much they're going to get. And I was offended by that because there's no guarantee people are going to get anything. And I will tell you what I can deliver, not what you might get. However, I notice that throughout the year, people are dropping off donuts or cakes or whatever, holidays, whatever their meals are, barbecues, somebody having a party to bring stuff to the gatehouse. But at the holiday, it's actually, I never really got tipped anyplace. And all of a sudden, my gosh, in my case, 3 months of what I would have drawn as salary in that position came in cash. And I said, wow, that's pretty cool. So let the guards tell each other what happens. I don't guarantee it. I'm not trying to make that part of the compensation package. They also know, though, if they work a Thanksgiving, a Labor Day, a 4th of July, Christmas, New Year's, I'm going to come by, and in addition to the salary, here's a C-note, and but man,
yep,
all that stuff. It goes a long way. It goes a long way. And I like cash more than gift cards. They do too.
Yeah.
We do those things. The fact is, as they become more visible and stay longer, the residents know who they are and the gifts become larger. The other thing is, you talked about relationships. It's really important to develop a relationship with that customer. And I don't mean just the property manager or the HOA president. Managers change. Property managers get elected out. So this is for every security company. I know they know it, but I'll repeat it. You got to go deep and wide. At Oakdale, for example, I know every board member. Try to treat everybody good because new people do come on board. We just recently had a complete change over the board, but I know the folks. Thank goodness. Property manager, I know. Always make the property manager's job easy. I never complain. I don't bug them with phone calls. Maybe a quick email. Here's what I observed. Oh, you said somebody's coming in to dredge the lake. By the way, they got here. They were really nice, blah, blah, blah. Stay in constant communication. Have a relationship with every one of those leaders. And it's just a way of thanks. But every one of those board members at the holidays, they're always doing things for us. I try and do something for them. Now, you have to be appropriate. You can't go over the top. You can't do it corporately. But at Thanksgiving, not Christmas. Everybody does something at Christmas. I wanted to stand out. I do it at Thanksgiving. And I might be mixed nuts one year or something else, but it's a personal note to every one of the people thanking them for the business. And they remember it. Because not many people give them anything. I do.
Smart advice.
Can't hurt.
No.
Again, you're not trying to buy business, so you're not going crazy. I know some people have been really extravagant with property managers, and then I've heard, oh, you got that account because you're paying off so-and-so. No, not doing that. Just, I remember you. And Thanksgiving, yeah, Easter. I do Easter. Yeah. Sometimes 4th of July.
Yeah.
Little things. It doesn't cost that much. You get 20 people, you got a hit. And I go beyond the property manager. Accounts payable. Who's writing my checks, there making sure I get paid? They're on the list too. People don't even know who they are. I know who mine is. And so, knock on the table, I get my checks on time. Because from a cash flow standpoint, I'm billing a month in advance. So I don't want them to miss a check.
Nope.
So here's the invoice. Here's several weeks to deal with it, and I need it on this date. And I've been very fortunate with the companies I'm working with. They all pay on time.
Yeah, it's relationship building. No doubt. Are you having a good time, though?
I am. I never thought I'd be in the business. Never. You get to a certain age, you're not going to get another corporate job. I know, to be like 50, 51 like me. Ooh, ancient, baby. No, it's just like, you're not going to get hired. They can't do it. So you're going to have to either enjoy your retirement, start a little business, a little independent consulting thing. I never liked to do consulting because all I could do is charge for my time. So I'd rather go into this kind of business where if I do it properly and expand it wisely, and I focus all on one geographic area, only one type of customer. I can specialize exclusive residential communities, and I can drive to all my spots within 20 minutes. Then I can control that. And maybe down the line, somebody would like to buy it. So you got to have an exit strategy. A couple, two, 3 years down the road, maybe I'd consider it. Right now, I'm really happy serving the people, and it sounds funny, but they're so appreciative. Throughout your career, you can do some great things. There's always repercussions. You do great things, somebody's jealous of it. You do this, it's the constant fight, right? I do this job. It's relatively simple if you do it right. Just follow the rules. They're really simple. It can get busy. You can get some idiots, but it's rare. So you're getting all this positive feedback all the time, and you go, oh, that's great. What do I have to do? Payroll, accounting, whatever. It's all right. So it becomes a fun job.
Let me ask you, how do you check in? What's the best way you found to check in with your board members or your manager company? Do you do it by email, phone call, or what's your check-in?
It's a really great question, and it might be deeper with the answer than you want, but number one, I don't want any of my guards to initiate contact with a board member outside of letting people into the community, the president or the property manager. If there's an issue, call me. I'm going to be that sole contact. It's probably a phone call or an email. If the board member contacts them, please respond and copy me on the response. So I'm tuned into the communication loop. And what I do, I see most of these board members. I'm there 3 days a week. I'm going to see them on a daily basis. It might just be a wave. It's a comment. It's a new dog, whatever it is. I just have a conversation with them. If there's an issue, I'm going to email. I'm not doing annual reports. I'm not creating a bunch of noise. I try to address any operational issue with the property manager if needed via email, being considerate of their time. And that's about it.
No, I think it's great advice. And the reason why I brought that up is I obviously did that business too. And my problem, I found guards, especially if I took over that contract and the board said, we really like Gary. We want Gary to stay on. That's fine. But what I found out is Gary's just a little too controlling, got himself really involved with the community. He's starting to tell the guards what to do. And then I lose that point of contact, lose the ability to manage him, set the rules that the board originally wanted when we got there. And now I'm fighting this kid, right? And with one of the board members that loves him for some reason, doesn't know the crazy side about him. Have you ever had that experience?
Twice. Dealt with it different ways. The first time, the first community I took over had a guard that had been there for a lot of years. Community loved him because they knew him. They recognized him. He was horrible. Just horrible. Wasn't checking people in properly. Just horrible. I showed up one day, and he was rebuilding a transmission in the guardhouse. I said, what are you doing? People would come, oh, wait a minute, I'm going to wipe my hands off. I couldn't believe it. And I had observed this guy for a while. The former owner of the company, oh, I can't touch him. He's so connected. I said, he's ruining your reputation. So I took over the company, and I didn't invite him to join me. Oh, you want me? No, I'm good. I got people. Thanks. Just gone. Got rid of him. Because I had talked to him as a supervisor before I owned the company over 4 or 5 different months. And he's like, yeah. You're number one? What are you doing there? He was just, he wouldn't listen. I said, all right. It could be a simple thing. You know, our name tags go here. Every other company I work with, they go over here. I said, but now it's this company. Everything was pushback or very passive aggressive. Gone. New property I took over, person had been there 20 years. Everyone knows the person. She's rough. There were no written HOA policies. All word of mouth through 4 different security companies, and that's what she was practicing. So I put together a playbook. Here's how we do it, trying to get her on board. Your thoughts on this? You got everything right? And had some pushback and did some things to let her know that I'm there, I care, I can help resolve problems. Here are things that we don't do, gossip to the board members, the neighbors. It's a small community, 32 homes. These guys are paying $8,000 a year. They don't want to hear this noise. They like you because you're familiar. So I wound up, the HOA president asked me what I thought. I was very candid and wrote it up. If you talk to her like that, maybe not as directly. If you given her a review, yeah, right now. Okay, so I gave her a review, let her know the good things and the things that just had to be addressed. And she started to turn the corner and constant coaching and coaching. And she's come around. I'm the best ever. You now care.
Now you're the best. Huh?
Oh, I'm the best. I want to go to prom with you. So it's like.
A lot of work, huh?
It's a lot of work.
People skills. And I will tell everybody for the record, you guys that are out there, and you can back me up on this, Jack, and you're going to go take on an association, I highly recommend that you go interview the people first. You don't let the board members set the tone as far as who you're going to hire. If they are going to set that tone, then you need to really get out and take a look at the people, because it's going to be a tough job for you if you decide to do that. In other words, a lot of guys say, okay, sure, no problem, whatever. I'll be more than happy to take those people on. You may be taking on a bunch of headaches, all right? So it's not only evaluating the board, but it's evaluating the current staff that's there. It's great, and I know you want them because you're thinking, I don't have to worry about hiring staff, but it could be problematic. Would you agree?
You're so right, and I don't like to rebadge any employee. This was a discussion point during my presentation and proposal process because so many people knew this person for so long. Would I consider keeping her? I said, on a trial basis, and they really wanted me to keep her. And she was at an incredibly inflated price, shocking. I said, okay, I'll keep her. Here's the deal. This is my pay rate. This is hers. So this was my proposal, and we just bumped it up, bang. He said, okay, center. So they paid for her, and I knew it was going to be a problem. And it's starting to work out. She knows everything operationally. She can fix a lot of things. And then I had to pull her back from doing the gardening and the landscaping and wanting to paint the gatehouse. And then our job is visitor management. Just do that. Just do that.
Yeah. You're highly skilled in dealing with people. No question. Okay. So a lot of the owners today are not, some of them, especially social media. I call it social media generation.
I watch NCIS, and I know that they will find the fingerprints on the throat. So I try to do it another way, but it's a lot of work. It's extra work.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to add the pain and suffering on that. So for sure. But yeah, I think it can be a great business otherwise. It really can.
I've liked it. And again, there's something very rewarding with certain things in life. If you ever cut your own grass, it's satisfying. You did it and you saw it. Wow, I did that. You paint a wall, you put up new tiles in a studio. It's fulfilling. It's satisfying. And this work is satisfying because every day somebody comes by and says something nice almost. At the quarterly board meetings, this one community, I just love this. Residents show up and they don't get a huge turnout, but a good percentage. And what do they do at the meeting? You show up if you got a complaint. Somebody's complaining about the landscaping, the fountain, there's algae in the pond. And then somebody says something about security. Standing ovation, and they applauded our company. Wow. Made me feel so good. And because I didn't attend that meeting, we weren't invited to it, but I heard about it and I thought it was great. And instead of just feeling great, I told everybody on our staff what happened and why they did that and the service they expect and how we have to continue that. Not lengthy lectures, not big emails. They're sound bites, they're headlines, it's a paragraph, little reminders. Because the folks don't want to read anything long. Yeah. But the constant reinforcement without sounding like your mother sending you newspaper clips when you're in college. Look what happened to this guy.
Yeah.
But that's what we do, and they appreciate it, and everybody feels good.
Do you agree? I'm a big believer. I know it takes time, but sometimes if I think a phone call to a security officer does a great job in the middle of the night on early mornings where they're not forgotten, because those are the people that are forgotten. They're like mushrooms. They always claim to be. Just that 2-second phone call. Hey, just want to know, I appreciate you. Versus a text message. Hey, great job. Or with emoji. Yeah.
No, you're right. You're so right. Little things. Thunderstorm warning. Give a call. Everything okay? You all right? If the power goes out, you can keep using gate sentry. You know how to get the gates open if the power shuts down? I got the bar, little things, just checking in. You do get snow and ice once in a while in Dallas. A quick phone call. How you doing? Making the drive in all right? Fantastic. Thanks for getting through that storm. Whatever it is, little reinforcements. It goes a long way. I would like that. If I'm out there all on my own, do they care? Do they know I'm here?
100%.
And you told me this too when you were running a security company. It's not that expensive overall. Yeah, it cuts into margin, but whether it's coffee, snack bars, apples, something, it's there in the gatehouse. I've had some people coming in and they're running late and they get there and I don't see their bag or anything. I said, did you get a chance to bring your lunch or dinner or whatever? No, I was running. What do you like? Go out and get it, bring it back. It goes a long way.
Here's another one that goes a long way. And this is for supervision, supervisors, your owners, management, different style. And I tell this to operations people or people that go out to do these quote-unquote inspections, right? Don't police them. Go in there and say, hello, how are you? How's family? How's the kids? How's your schedule? What you got going this weekend, right? We're not going to talk work. Let's just take that minute, find a good time where he has time to sit with you. He doesn't feel like he's being managed or supervised at the time, right? You don't have to gig him on his belt line and all that right away. You don't have to, hey, you were late last week. It's not a beat-up session, right? If you just go out there and just have a really open conversation, like you care about them, how things going, how's your schedule. Not only if you're doing that, it's a great opportunity to say, what's your next couple weeks look like? Holidays are coming up. Are you good? You got any major trips, right? you find out a lot of things. Oh, I was really hoping to maybe get that day off or whatever, right? So you're gathering intel, you're getting all the information. Hey, let's go for a walk or show me what you're doing. Hey, you're great job. Share some advice. That went so far with other people, right? The people that I manage, they love that part. And then most important, do not tell them, okay, I'll see you in a couple hours. Okay. Meaning you're not coming back, but what you're really telling them is I'm watching you and I'm going to come back in a couple hours and you never come back. It's different. So like you said, keep your word. If you say I'm coming back, then come back.
Yep.
But don't tell them that because everybody goes, oh yeah, he's just worried about me falling asleep. No, that's the way they think.
No, you're so right on all counts. Never ask an old person how they're feeling. They might tell you.
I love that.
But otherwise, you're right.
I love that. All right. And, you know, I hate the word culture because I've been around some new corporate people that just abuse the hell out of that word. Can you give us the 10 basic, very commandments, Jack, of just running a good business and taking care of people from the stuff you've done? Can you just go do this and this? Whatever you can remember, just very simple terms for a good running business outside of using.
Number one, you have to understand what your value proposition is and what your promise is to the customer. You got to know that. You have to know how you differentiate. With me, it's customer-enabled technology and service. That's it. But you have to know what you're all about. You have to make sure your people understand what you're all about. You've got to hire people that reflect what you're all about. You have to train them on what you're all about. Coach them, catching them doing the right thing. Reward them. Communicate with them. That all sounds very textbook, but it's really important. If you have to reprimand, it's not a surprise. And I hate to cut ties, but if I've told you something a couple, two or three times, maybe there's another place you'll be happier.
Yeah.
And you'll let them go. Again, maintaining the relationships with your own team, the customer base, and even the vendors and people who come through, they'll be the same people over and over. So you're developing a reputation for service. And it's so funny how people will then refer you to other people. A lot of people don't really promote, but they'll cause word of mouth advertising. That's like just luck. People are telling you. There's referrals, which is a different program where you actually put incentives in place for people to refer you. I'm not doing that right now. I know my target market. There's only six places I want to go to. Two of them want me to put in a proposal. One wants me to wait, and the other one I'm just waiting to pull the trigger on. So that's all I want to do with this company right now. And if I can deliver on all those spots, then I'm keeping a large part of North Dallas happy. They tell people, and I've put together something that another company might be interested down the road. People, this is one real key piece of advice, I think. People think value is price. It's not. Value is price plus something. Price plus question mark equals value. 7-Eleven, price plus, convenience was value. I'll pay a little more. You're always there. You're always open. In the security business, it's my price plus this extraordinary service that nobody else is getting. That my friends say, it's so nice when I come here. I go to that other place. It's horrible. When board members come by my community and there's no long line to get in and people are checking people in and they look across the street and they've got traffic backed up, 13, 14 cars, it's a difference. So it's the price plus the question mark. My question mark is the service with technology equals the value. So I'm not the cheapest, not the most expensive, but I provide the most value. And so every company has to think about, what's that question mark? What are you delivering nobody else does? And if you can't answer it, you're in trouble. It's like playing poker, right? You can't pick out the sucker at the table. It's you.
Yeah.
So you really have to know what you stand for, what your brand is, and then everything's got to reflect it. Every good. Touch point.
Yeah, and I'm going to recap too. So for everyone, hire slow, fire fast to a certain degree. But when I say fire fast, what I mean by if you have a cancer, right? A person in your organization is cancer. The problem with a lot of the industry, they don't want to change a person because they're struggling. That can cause damage, okay? And then so be very careful of that when we talk about termination. Just finding the right people. I'm sorry, you got to go. You have to make that happen because it will destroy your team. It's like a cancer cell. And then the great thing, the plus value. That is really the key. So get away from the mission statement, the core values. I hate those words.
Every company that gets in trouble,
why?
First thing they do, go out and write a mission statement. What are your values? You have to know what it is and how you're going to deliver it, and you must deliver on it.
And would you agree, and you're proven that you provide a good business, you get referrals?
Sure. I'm getting referrals, again, through word of mouth. They're outside of my target geography that I want to do. I might refer it to another company. But I know what works for me strategically. I know the geography I want to be in. I don't want to expand beyond it. I don't want to do a bunch of corporate accounts. I want high-end residential communities that value service, willing to pay for it. They're not as affected by ups and downs in the economy. These are people who are living in, they're not starter homes.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's great input. Jack, I am, you know how I feel about you. We worked together. Been a great friend. I can't, again, thank you for coming in and sharing your podcast and helping me as much as you've helped me with my businesses. Not only as a friend, but as a business coach, look at your background. I can't even tell you how guilty I felt after I found out your background because you're so humble, right? I go, I have this guy helping me. It's kind of like their resumes. Oh my gosh, look at this. But
I tell you, Chris, and again, it's like one of these talk shows. And I love you. I love you.
Yeah.
I told you, I've always been blessed to be with some great people. The local chamber was a guy named Donald Stone, who's like a dad to me. The U.S. Chamber, Dr. Lesher was the president, and then Jay Van Andel's the chair. I was blessed going to Amelie with DeVos and Van Andel. Great people. Great people at Franklin Mint. I'll never forget them, their lessons. And I got very lucky at Novo One. A friend of mine, Mary Murcott, was CEO. We put her up with Obama and blew that company wide open. It just really worked. And then I get into this business, and you are the mentor. You're the guy. When I'm in trouble, I call you. And I'm sorry that everybody calls you, because they all do. And if I call you, you got to put me on the clock. You got to charge me, because you give all this free advice. And it's good advice. It's advice people should pay for. And you do it out of your good heart. Mm. And for all you guys who are listening to this podcast, quit taking advantage of this guy. My father, with the truck repairs and remanufacturing business, everybody said, oh, Bob, you're working so hard. You're working so hard. Then they bring the car in. Could you check this for me? The uncles and everything. That's what they're doing to you. And it makes me feel bad. You should feel great that you've got that reputation. You know the industry inside out. That's why people turn to you. But they have to realize that you've got a nut too someplace. Everybody charges for their time. Call Dr. Chris. Get ready and pay the bill.
Yeah, thank you, Jack. Maybe choke up on that one. Thank you, Jack. I love you, man, and you know that. And like I always tell, I got to have you back. But you know what? You and I are. Thank you, Jack. Thank you for coming.
Thank you. Enjoyed it.
Thank you very much.
Bye bye.
Comment, like, share, and subscribe.